This is Rage, Radio Against Global Ecocide. This week on the show, Chuanis and Anthony, former students of the Indigenous Governance Program at the University of Victoria. Music by DJ Spooky and Saul Williams. Also, resident anti-hero. This is Rage, building a community of resistance one podcast at a time. Hello, and welcome to Radio Against Global Ecocide, coming to you from occupied Amiskwisi, Wiskaigan. I am your host, Seymour Life, and welcome to the new updated Rage website. A special thank you goes to the amazing Stephanie McMillan, who did all the artwork for the new logo. I spoke with Chuanis and Anthony about relationship with Earth and the beings that we share her with, or more to the point, the lack of relationship that exists in the dominant culture. They both shared their insights, their people's insights, and their stories. I started by asking them to introduce themselves.
I carry the name of my family, my uncle, Chipayatin, but they call me Anthony for the sake of being able to recognize and remember me within the system of the illegal occupying United Snakes. So that's the name that they gave me, and that's the name they have underneath my my card, keeping track of me as a card-carrying member of the Holocaust survivors.
So my name's Chawinis Aksup, and for short, people call me Chawinis, and it means boulder on the beach woman. I'm from Ch'eklesit and Tlaoquit, which are part of the new channels on the west coast of Vancouver Island. We have a direct relationship with the salmon in the history of both my people and my family. And so, you know, when you ask that question, it's really important because some of the because it's always a clash that comes between sort of environmental struggles and native people. Say, for instance, in Clackwood Sound, there was always that clash because people were trying to glean from our culture and our beautiful ways to be able to advance their cause. And I think that first part of your question is how do we do that? Well, I don't know that I can answer that, but I can say that in New Channel, we actually call ourselves Ko'os Mina or Ko'osa, which means human beings or real live human beings. That speaks to our obligation to the Hahofli, which is the land, the sea, the sky, the mountains, and the air. We're supposed to get up every day and commit to that every day to make sure we have the right thoughts and take the right action that day. And so salmon is definitely one of our relatives. And in that way, you start off your life becoming that person, like working on every day becoming that person. And so your attitude in the world isn't that the humans are the center. You're just part of a whole bunch of other beings. That's a puzzle to me to how people don't understand that. I do see over time, though. So it's also a difficult question because New Channels are in the middle of treaty negotiations and fisheries litigations about our right to basically make money off fish. And so we've moved along over history as well and have become entrenched in looking at salmon as a resource as well, sort of politically and through litigation such as these. And so I think that's all I'm going to say about that for now. Kind of Anthony will be really good at talking about this, so I'm going to hand it over to him.
I'm from the lower Elwynn Exclaim peoples from across the water by what they call Port Angeles and the legally occupied territory now known as the United Snakes of America. It's very tough, like as an indigenous or as a native person or as an Elwynn Exclaim person, to be able to discuss like a way to be able to like center yourself as Chawinis was discussing, like to center yourself and to be able to see certain beings as living in a sense. It's tough to discuss that to anybody who's hasn't necessarily understood or been raised up to know or believe these certain ideas. But I can explain it from a context of the way that like I was taught, and the way that I was taught with these certain beings that exist is that we're of everybody, humans are the youngest, so therefore we have the least say in what happens in so many ways, right? And so in that sense, when you see a clear cut, like that's the land saying you have to stop in your area, that's a land crying for help or, you know, demanding that you stand up for something, saying that you have to stop this because this is abnormal. Or when you see fish runs that are either overly high or overly low for that area, that's the salmon saying, okay, well, it's time for you to be able to change this, whatever the environmental issues are. Or whenever you see anything that's abnormal in your community, you have the least say. And that's the reason that, in a sense, like the although over romanticized idea of being protectors, that's because we're the ones that are obligated to do such things, right? Because we're placed in that situation as being the youngest and therefore the most obligated to do more. For when you discuss about indigenous community, they say we have elders, right, that we look to. But then that's also very just humanized from a human. So we're talking about the older people in our communities, the older as far as like the humans that exist with us, the Nixtlan peoples right there. We don't start talking about the fact that, oh, also we talk about, at least we pay lip service to the fact that the trees happen to be our grandmother, the cedar tree happens to be our grandmother, the rocks happen to be our grandfather, the water happens to be our older relatives as well. And so those, in fact, are our elders that even our elder humans have to listen to and have to pay attention to and have to be able to function for. Like, we have obligations and responsibility to these things, you know, and so therefore we have to be able to teach in our communities. And like I said, it's very tough for me to discuss this to a non-native in a sense, but we have to be able to teach our youngsters of that importance. We can't just put it in a human context and say that the humans are what we say go, because in fact, if you look at our traditions now, it's very different than the Christian tradition, where it suggests that we have dominion over everything. In this sense, those beings have dominion over us. They tell us what we're supposed to do. And if we don't listen, we lose our place within that centeredness, within that connection right there. We lose our place. And again, if we lose our place, eventually everything will come to crumble, regardless of civilizations, regardless of how big they become. They'll crumble. Actually, thousands or hundreds of thousands of years in the road, things will be able to start coming back and overgrowing. What I'm saying is that humans aren't necessarily needed for the world. Like, we're the most minimal. We're in fact more of a hindrance to the environment than anything. So what I'm suggesting is that, like, the environment, and I explain this within my community as our culture. Our culture doesn't necessarily need us to survive. We have to fight to be a part of our culture, and our culture means the makeup of our land and of everything else. So it's our job to do everything that's necessary to be able to keep everything in order. That's our job. So for the things that, although there are elders, they may be incapable to do certain things that we can do within the environment. And so that's looking at them as very much more representing peoples than we are. We're no longer following our original instructions. They're following the instructions that were in place for them, though, still to this day. And the way that I would say that, indirectly, in the context of salmon, what I suggested once to a few people is that with the salmon, we had an original agreement that was in place, and I could get into the story, but I mean, at the same time, explain the story would take a long time right now. But what it is that we had a relationship set in place. One is that the salmon gives themselves to us, and then we'd be able to return, honor the salmon, to be able to, like, keep the environment safe enough for the salmon to continuously return. Well, in my community, there's what they call the Elwha River Dam, which is one of the largest dam projects in the United States of America. And it was, they found loopholes, and so they didn't create ladders for salmon. And so all these different problems were created, and so the salmon couldn't return. But the problem was, is that when they started building in 1910 and then finally finished in 1934, is that our elders told stories about how the water used to be red because the salmon would come up and there would be the spawning salmon, and it would be their bellies from all of their eggs inside of their stomachs to be able to return. But they started seeing a different red after this dam was built. And what it was the salmon trying to fulfill their obligation to us to be able to finish going up the dam. And they would crush their heads against the dam and they would kill themselves trying to fulfill their obligation to us. Our obligation to them would have been to tear down the dam so they could continue there. That would have been our obligation as according to the original agreement. We forgot our original agreement. They keep their agreements. Every single being in our area has kept its agreement. We're the only ones who have turned away from our agreement. And so if you see it from those terms, I mean, that's being a responsible person, is to be able to, like, maintain your word, right? And so that's the simplest way to put it. That's in an indigenous context in so many ways. But if you allow yourself to see it, is that every single being is almost seen as a peoples, right? So you don't necessarily, so when you're talking about salmon, you're seeing them as peoples. When you're talking about trees, you're seeing them as peoples. So you're not separating them. There's no high, even not necessarily a hierarchy in the sense, there's only older and younger. And so those senses is that you'll eventually get to be older. There's no separation, right? So we're just as obligated to them as they are obligated to us. if you say you have love for your child, you're supposed to have as much love for the salmon as you. There's no differentiation of love, right? Because there's no being that's less and no being that's more, right? And so that's difficult to explain in a non-Indigenous context outside of our communities. But if people could like fully understand that, I think that people would have an ability to be able to step aside from just it being just a human centric to speak, you know, so to speak, and be able to see like the things that those beings carry out for us in order for us to even be here, when in fact they don't necessarily even need us. A brief story real quick, if that's okay with you, for to talk about like the importance of the salmon. So I'm gonna cut it bits and pieces, so it's not going to be the full story just for the sake of time, but start with our people. And actually a lot of people in the Northwest area kind of share a similar story, but with our people there's a story that exists with our people. And so what happened was is that we had an original agreement between salmon, between our people, to be able to salmon give itself again. Salmon are also people. When they go back they have villages under the sea in a sense, that where they shed their salmon skin and they turn into humans. And because they are people, the same, so they turn just like us, they look just like us. They have an ability beyond us though to be able to turn themselves into what they become, to be able to feed us. But in feeding us, they also become us too, right? And so that's the way that it's explained. But with that, the reason the story comes back to that is that we also have an honoring ceremony at the beginning of each season of being able to fish for salmon. And the way I was explaining with that is that in the fall, when the leaves start falling from trees, our people don't necessarily notice it, but when they start falling from trees and they hit the ground, it sounds like drums, like to the salmon, like telling them to come home, calling them to come home, to be able to do their dance, to be able to swim home. And so a long time ago, we used to do this, and we used to have the kids would go back and take the bones of the salmon, and they would put them back into the river, and they would put them back so that they would go back, and it allowed the salmon, because the salmon have that ability to be able to regenerate, and so they would come back also. It's an idea of reincarnation in so many senses. One time there was this boy, he was a really bad kid, and he decides not to. At one point in time, he decides not to. So he doesn't go back, and he dumps the salmon bones back into a bush on the side of the little path, because he wants to go off and play somewhere else. He doesn't want to have to walk all the way down to the river. So he dumps them over there, and he goes and plays, and he comes back, and he tells everyone that he did. And so everyone believes him, obviously. But anyways, one time he's out there, and he's playing by the river. And when he's playing by the river, he falls into the river. And he starts drowning, and he's going to drown. But what happens is that the salmon, they save him. They take him, because this is the time they're coming down. So they save him, and they put him back down. They pull him into their village, and they take care of him. And they take care of him like he's never been taken care of before in his life. And when they're taking care of him, he realizes this. He realizes that he should, in so many ways, he should be honoring these people because of how nice they feed him well. They treat him like, in so many ways, I guess, for lack of a better term, a king or a chief or whatever you want to say. They treat him in that way, and they're taking care of him, making sure everything's fine, and making sure that he feels better from the way that he almost drowned, because he got sick from that as well. And so while he's out there, he plays with the kids, and he learns to love those kids who are just, they're people just like him, and he learns to love them. And then one day he's playing, and he sees this girl. She's walking, and half of her body won't move. It's like, and he can't figure out why, but half of her body isn't able to move. And so he asks some of the other kids, like, why that happened, and like what it is. And they said, oh, she has no bones. She has no bones on that side of her body, like her whole face and her whole arm and her legs and her ribs. There's no bones there. And he realizes, but he doesn't tell them. He realizes then that that's because he didn't return those bones back to the water at that point, because these are the same salmon that are up that river at that time. They're the same salmon connected directly to his community. So that basically they're a village of his people. You know, they're another village of his people. And so he realizes this, and this is this kid who was acting bad. His life was always nothing about being mischievous. And so finally he has to stay there a year until the next salmon run to be able to come back. And they bring him back, and he comes back, and he tells them, and he says, you know, like, this is even bigger than I think we even understood thus far. And it's even larger than I understood, but these people took care of me in this way. They honored me. They respected me. And so, and also because of my actions, I caused problems in their community. I caused sickness in their community. And so therefore he said, we have to do this. We have to maintain our relationship because they respect us so much. We have to respect them the same because I don't think that we respect them the same, but they honor us and therefore we should honor them too. And they honor us when they, in many facts, they're more important than us. They have more spiritual significance than us. They have more power than us, but they honor us in that way. And so he said, that's the way that we have to treat them as such. And so the significance of that story is several. You say, you know, what you do in your environment affects a different environment. The connection to salmon, how salmon are intricately linked to our existence, how we're intricately linked to their existence as well. So it says so many things. But what it also says is that it says a lot of, it's telling about how we are now when we start treating salmon as resources, when in fact they're our relatives. So that's saying that we could also sell off and kill off and ruin the environment of our people. And I heard a story just recently. Waz told me a story about a man who makes his living on the East Coast on the St. Lawrence River, you know, still eating fish out of the river, even though there's advisories not to eat them because they're so poisonous. But he expressed that, but this is us. This is who we are. These are our people. Mm-hmm. And in so many ways, we shouldn't have that option. We shouldn't have an option to be, because they're suffering the consequences of our action or our inaction, right? So therefore, we should continue to face the same consequences they do, or else change the environment so those things aren't there anymore, right? And so that's what that story tells me is the fact of our obligation to the salmon because of their obligation they feel towards us and the respect they've given to us. And that's the way I see it. I don't see a reason to disbelieve that story. Some people would take it and say, is that literal? Is that a metaphor? What's going on there? I don't see it. Or nothing less than literal. And so therefore, that's what I see my obligation to the salmon is that how can we treat these things as being resources? How can we treat these things as being insignificant enough for us to stand up and take the same action that we would if we seen our brother or our sister getting murdered in front of us? What would we do? Would we sit by and watch that? What would we do? Would we sit by and watch our grandmother be raped in front of us? What would we do? You know, and so the reality is if salmon are that important and that's the sacrifice they give to us, then we have the same obligation to give that same sacrifice right back to them. We consider ourselves the salmon people. That's what they say. But it's all lip service until we start living like that, correct? I mean, that's the way I see it at least. And so this is how much they give to us. So I define people's importance by how much they give to me or how much they respect of me, right? That's what people say. You don't get respect until you give respect, those type of things, right? Well, this is the type of respect that we've been given by the salmon people, the five different nations of salmon people that exist along the Elwha River. You know, different areas have different ideas of that. Basically, salmon are our predecessors. You know, they're our descendants. They're our ancestors. They're all of those things. They come before us, you know, and they've given us life and they continue to give us life. So therefore, we have to maintain their lives too. And so I guess the importance on that level is I can't really describe the importance. I think that someone can figure out the importance by what I'm saying. That's the importance. You know, if people label things as being gods or people label things as being, I don't know, they would be in those type of categories. They should be in those type of categories for us. They should be even more important than our own lives. We should be willing to sacrifice our own lives for those beings, you know.
When Anthony was telling that, that's an amazing story, and it's really true, you know. It's true. Those stories are real, and the word story doesn't really capture what they are. I know that to be true because on the coast, too, like one of the things this brings up also for us as Native people whose relationship, we still have stories about our relationship. We still do things that maintain our relationship, but constantly come into conflict with Canada or the state, United Snakes, or Clanada, KKK, Clanada. We constantly come into conflict. For instance, there is a story that's very old about Lalkwit and Cannery Bay. And when I was younger, I used to really question whether this was a real story. I found out later another man who'd been he's an elder now, had been listening. He saw that I had written down this story for my grandpa about Mukshu. They call him Stone Man in English. And he verified, yeah, that's a real direct descendant of a particular family. They come from that family. And this man was, he had, he had a sockeye run in Cannery Bay, and it was really at that time, you know, before there were non-native people here and fisheries and corporations and all that stuff. There was a big fishery run, and we had really strict laws about greed in our communities. They were very strict, but this guy had that sockeye run. He was so, anytime anybody came into that river, he killed them. And they said that man was so strong because at the time when we ate the way we did and we lived the way they did, my family says the men would be like five man's handspans across the shoulder. They were really strong, and he was particularly strong. So if anybody came out, he'd just walk out into the river and he could literally kill people with their bare hands. And that's what he did. He also had we call him wife now, his Sootsma at the time would have children. And when he had children, he found out he had boys. He was so greedy about his sockeye run that he killed any male children he had. And so the mother, she got sick of it and she got smart. And so she hid. she tucked his penis so he couldn't tell that this was a boy. And I know it's awkward to say nowadays, but I mean, this is from my late grandpa, and he was an old man. He didn't have any trouble talking. So Moksha would look and say that it sounds like a boy who's crying. And the mother would say, no, no, no. She took a big risk on her own life to hide him. And then she called a nation farther up the river and sent this boy to them. And they raised him up. And when he was doing what he was supposed to, getting up every day, getting himself ready to do the right thing that day, you know, going down to the river in the morning. And one day this Cheha came to him, this ancestor came to him and gave him this bone sword, this chitos made out of whalebone. And he said, you're going to take this sword and you're going to go and kill Moksha. And so when he became a young man, and we don't really know because we didn't really count the number of years, but we assume he's probably like a young teenage man. He went back down to the river and he went out the river, and just the same as always, Moksha came out and he grabbed one fist and he went to club. He didn't know this was his son. He went to club him, and his son chopped off one arm, and then his other arm came up. He was so angry, so greedy. His other arm came up and he tried to club him again, and that sword sliced right through his other arm, and Moksha was still pushing. He wouldn't stop. He lifted one of his powerful legs. It was like a cedar tree, I guess, so strong. Went to kick him, and the young man chopped off his leg, and the same with his other leg, and he sank to the bottom. And they stay still there in Cannery Bay. But that shows also the disruption of the way in which, well, the way we're treated as savage, or that our laws and the way we maintain balance in our communities, how we participated in maintaining that balance and fulfilling our obligation to our relatives. I mean, that man didn't just do that so the fishery would run for himself and his community, but because there was an imbalance happening when there was an overabundance of sockeye, when there were people who were hungry, took all things into consideration. And that takes a lot more time than things do today, but it also requires a much stronger, clearer commitment to those things. So I really appreciate Anthony talking about that, because it made me think about how when we go to our cert, even the right, you know, you put it forward into the context of today, if Indian people decide to fish for food on a day that isn't designated by the Department of Fisheries, we come up against the Department of Fisheries usually in a reverse sort of violence, political or violent confrontation. And so that's kind of the reality we live in. And that the more that we as young people move forward, the more frustration we feel at having our hands tied for standing up for the things that we see going on around us. I guess maybe not having our hands tied, but falling for the delusion that we can't even say the things we need to say flat out, let alone take the right kinds of action. Not even done in stories and in images, because what it does is conjure up the, you can see it happening when you hear the stories from people too. You can see that's what's important. That's what I think is transformative for me, is hearing them. I can see what's happening, and therefore I can imagine myself doing those things.
The problem with like talking about responsibility is that responsibility also requires action. And so that's you know, if you have a responsibility, so something, here's the best way to put it, and I guess this can be put on a larger scale or an analogy to look at something bigger. But if you go somewhere, let's say into a community in the past, and someone, say, raped somebody, correct? Let's just say that's what happened. And that could be out of greed, right? Out of their self-need or whatever. You can just say that's the situation. Well, in some areas, a tendency to be able to stop that action from happening again would be to castrate the person who raped somebody in that community. And therefore, the people who felt that greed or that need to be able to do that would think twice about doing something. And so at the very least, the repercussion was at least present there. Right now, the repercussions for being greedy, right now, the repercussions for those type of things. This is what's interesting about. So I was going to talk about this with Salmon after we started talking. But when we deal with Salmon runs, and in the past, this is what's interesting in the past. And I don't know how it is anywhere else, but in our area, you took the salmon that were in your river. You didn't even like fish in the ocean. This is reality. You took the salmon that were in your river because you might be taking other people's, like, and the reason it is obviously is because your relationship is that you have that direct relationship. So no one did that. If you did get caught taking salmon from another river, then you got dealt with accordingly. In some instances, you got your head chopped off out here, you know, with those whalebone swords or with their, and so you got clubbed, you got killed. These different things happen if you got caught doing things like that, because of your greed, for whatever, because of your laziness to go try and get something somewhere else, whatever it was, you got dealt with accordingly. And those type of things were present. Those type of things used to be present in our communities. Now we have people that, would rather light candles and sing Kumbaya and hope that and pray that maybe these people will stop doing this. Well, you know, we've tried this for hundreds of years now and it hasn't worked thus far. So we need to be able to reinstitute the repercussions at the very least, with the people that are doing these greedy type things. You know, if you I think about an idea like the movie Clear Cut, where, you know, if you ever seen the movie Clear Cut, where they took the person, you know, one of the CEOs of the company that was out there clear cutting, and he hung him up and he skinned his leg and was like, this is what the land feels like. You know, you do these type of things. Well, when people start feeling physical pain or start dealing with certain issues firsthand, they have a tendency to think about their actions after that, you know. And I don't know what kind of repercussions those would be. Obviously, the repercussions through the court and the law haven't worked thus far because people have a tendency to work around them. So people have to have a willingness to stand up and do a little bit more than just fall asleep in a tree or hug a tree or take, you know, whatever, handcuff themselves to the side of the road and then, you know, go willingly to jail. You know, people have to take further steps. Now, it's obvious to me. It's only obvious, right? It's not these things that we've been trying thus far haven't worked. And in our communities for a long time, for thousands of years prior to the onslaught of colonization, we had these things in place and they worked relatively well to keep our place in balance for tens of thousands of years. And then you talk about the past 100 or so years, 150 years in our area, where these things have become present without any kind of repercussions. That's when things started going downhill. There has to be repercussions. There has to be serious repercussions at that, you know. And that takes people that say they have responsibility having a willingness to understand that they will probably have consequences to their actions as well too, but their actions are for a bigger purpose, right? And so I think that's so all those people that yap real loud and talk real tough about responsibilities, they need to start acting. Otherwise, you know, again, that's just empty words that people talk about, because you can have all the responsibility in the world, but if you don't act on your responsibility, it doesn't mean shit. If you look at the condition of my community, drug abuse, alcohol abuse, suicide, deaths by, you know, whatever, cultural death, you know, all these different things that are happening there. You can look at it. You know, I can't sing the song right now. I can't say the song right now because it's not the beginning of the Salmon Run. But there's a song that basically directly translated into, you know, the salmon are our people, where they go, we go. And so if you look at that, if you say, well, in because of the fact that in our community, they're treated as resources, something to get people, you know, they catch salmon, they smoke salmon, they dry salmon, or they just catch salmon directly and sell it, and then they go to Safeway, you know, and that's what's happening. And so obviously that's because of something that happened and a change in their idea and way of living, but it's also because we're not doing what's necessary to protect the salmon. And in this sense, the Elwha River Dam was supposed to come down since 2007. That was an agreement that was made with the state and the federal government to be able to take down the Elwha River Dam. It's 2011. It still hasn't come down thus far. It's still, but at the same time, we don't have the luxury anymore of being able to wait for the government and expecting the government to be able to help us knock down. And so the situation is that none of our original ancestors, in the sense of the salmon, have had an ability to be able to go upstream and spawn since 1910. And so you can kind of, just from there, you can probably assess and imagine the situation with salmon. Then you have farm salmon that end up escaping from their little pens, and they create whole new species of salmon and are cause different kind of sicknesses amongst the salmon, so salmon can't come back. So there's all these problems that are happening out there. I honestly don't know how to deal with them, in a sense of that, like, it seems like it's getting so large right now with the new species of salmon being created. There's a whole process right now where they're talking about being able to genetically modify salmon without talking about anything. You know, it just got passed in the United Snakes. I don't know how it is up here. So we start seeing those type of things. And if we suggest salmon as people and indirectly our people, it's like you can only imagine what the consequences are going to be in our communities, right, if we don't do anything about it. So there's nothing, honestly, there's nothing promising happening in the terms of what people, you know, people are more conscious and people are, you know, writing books and having, you know, little meetings behind closed doors about what should be done, but nobody's doing anything. So therefore, the situation with our communities in salmon is that it's very drastic, it's very serious, it's very telling also of the reason that our people are still sick as well, because this is a situation with the salmon, as they go, we go. Also, it's because we're not willing to stand up. So you name the problems that could exist. I mean, also just with the sea temperatures changing minimally, you know, you can say the Fraser River had a gigantic salmon run, but you can go down where we're at. Skokomish had a horrible salmon run. Everyone's having, you know, like they said, there was like 7 or 8 boats and amongst them caught 70 salmon, you know what I mean? And this is crazy. This is unheard of, but it's our time to be able to take our obligation and our responsibility to a different level, to be able to like work, to be able to get that back to where it needs to be. Maybe it's us saying, okay, well, for 5 years, we're not going to fish. Maybe it's, we're going to start taking down these dams that are in place that are destroyed. Maybe it's all of these different things. Right. But as far as like the situation with salmon, like to get back to the original question, it's bad. It's very bad. It's not. And even our consciousness towards salmon is horrible as well. Yeah. Our consciousness are thinking about what salmon represents to our people. They see salmon as money now. They don't see them as, so they see it. It's almost like being willing to sell off your daughter, your sons, to be able to sell those things off too, as far as the way our people have been taught originally about what salmon represents to our people. So it's no wonder, like, why weren't our people up in arms when they said it's legal to genetically modify salmon? Why weren't our people up in arms when they're talking about putting salmon farms in all these different areas that are in, you know, and being able to see the studies of what happens once these salmon farms become present, the sicknesses that come to the natural, you know, the salmon out there. So I think it's horrible right now. Go ahead.
You're making me remember too, one of the things that I do want to say, and I've been thinking about this because Anthony and I have talked about this before, is that our communities currently are a good indicator of how salmon are doing. If, you know, they're obligated to us and we're obligated to them. One of the ways that's important for me as a Nuuchanoth woman is to look at the enormous rates of internalized sexualized violence against women in our communities. And that means that our original obligation to each other as men and women hasn't been paid attention to. And salmon were great teachers for that, because when they reach the falls, the male salmon would flip the female salmon up to the falls, up the falls, going against the flow of the water, and she would wait up there for the male to reach her or die waiting, and he would, vice versa, would try and until death or until he made it to reach each other, and we're seeing the kinds of social, physical, spiritual, all those kind of things happening within our communities. And I have to say too that on the West Coast, there were a group of women, and you know, it's the way that sort of even radical politics has sort of silenced some of the struggles that women have tried. When Indian people on the West Coast first started to become actually very rich off the fisheries, there was open fisheries. There were a group of women who protested our own people. And it was a challenging time because these were our own people that we respected for the things that they held up in our communities. And I'm not saying this was me because I wasn't even born then. But I know from these women, it's not talked about, it's not recorded anywhere. It's only told through people. But they stood up to these men in our communities and said, we can't be taking the fish, we're not holding up our obligation. Literally, that's the way they protested our own people. And it's the same with the violence that's happening in the communities as well. It's the women who are saying, no, you can't do this anymore, at a great cost, standing up and saying that, because we don't want to air our internal trouble for the world to say, look at those Indian people again, they can't do this and that, but to really just trying to say that at certain points of time, there was those women who said, no, you can't do this. We can't treat it as a commodity. We can't make our money off it. And they were like really coming from the place of feeling really hurt and really frightened for everybody, including our salmon relatives, for the kind of trajectory we were going on and continue to go on in terms of salmon.
I can only say in my community what I could help, because I can't necessarily say what's best for anybody else's community. I mean, I guess I could suggest that, but at the same time, that would be, in a sense, disrespectful. But at the same time, they also affect my community now. That's how closely connected we are, especially with the way that things exist. Directly with Sam, obviously, original teachings have to be adhered to, have to be followed. Those type of things have to be in place. I think that once these ideas become in place, that your understanding of certain principles and values that are present, I think that the necessity to be able to protect, stand up, in a sense, what warriors were in the past, with the willingness to be able to make people that came into your area. This is the whole idea. It isn't trying to change people, but it's saying when people are in your area, they adhere to the principles that are in place, the values that are in place right there. You can't change it. You can't divert from it. You can't kind of push any kind of other way. As long as they're in your area, they have to answer to what it is that you're trying to put out there. That's it. And so ideally, first, we have to be able to act like that, right? Before we can say that you have to, or someone else has to. For that to happen within my community, I think that everyone who's not has to be removed from the community for right now and from the area right now to be able to start being and acting in that manner, to be able to find ourselves. That's my belief. I don't think that's the belief of everyone else in the community as well. Either that, or we have to be able to find a place where we can raise young kids, young SCLAM kids, to be able to be that, to be removed from this other society right now, to learn the principles and values that are taught in the environment. You can learn from that, right? You learn that's where the culture is at. And so you can learn everything right there. You can learn the language, you can learn the songs. They come from these things out there. So you have to remove them completely from every kind of, I believe, of all the systems of education, I believe of all the other systems, and be able to allow them to live like that and raise up. We have the opportunity in our communities to be able to have a place that they could do that at. Not everyone else does. But I believe that that's the place we need to be. We need to get back to thinking and functioning on terms that adhere to the principles that were created by the salmon, by the trees, by these different principles and values that were given to us to be able to adhere to be able to function with. And so once we get there, we can start thinking about what kind of relationships we want to forge with other people. But right now, we can't think about relationships with other people when our relationship with ourselves is so disrespectful as of yet, and we don't even understand. We need to learn and understand who we are first, again, you know. And I think that in the process, obviously, people can fight and be able to protect our community. You know, that's the service that education might serve for some people, or the service that other functions might serve, is to be able to be the people that stand outside of that community and allow this community to slowly start healing. But I work towards everyone functioning. The area that's along the Elkhorn River is an Esklam territory. It was we were given original instructions there to function, to be able to allow that place to function and exist in balance, healthy. If people come there and they function in a way that's disrespectful or doesn't function in that manner, it causes an imbalance and causes ultimately sickness and causes ultimately the demise of the community, the culture, every living being that's around there. So I think that ideally we get to a point where we understand that ourselves and are willing to put pressure on other people to function in that manner. I know that seems like a long way away, but I have to look at that right now as the ultimate goal and take the smallest steps right now to be able to put that into play eventually, be it five generations down the line, be it two generations down the line. So that's the ideal ultimate goal. You know, how do we get there? Obviously, we have to remove ourselves from any kind of reliance on any state, on anybody outside of our own community, and start realizing the power of our own people, the culture in place, the spirits in place, however you want to take that spirit idea. But I think that all of those things need to be understood, at the very least, by us to be able to not necessarily impose on other people, but be able to make it mandatory for people that are stepping foot into our territory to live as such, to act as such, or else pay a price. That's where I see that we need to be. Otherwise, this whole process of extermination, this whole process of genocide, ecocide, whatever, is going to continue. It doesn't matter. Like, we can stop it or we can slow it, but it'll continue if we don't get back to the original principles and foundations that were in place for thousands and thousands of years. People have to understand that these things were in place for thousands and thousands of years. Different things were tried. They were discarded because they didn't work. But for thousands and thousands of years, there was these principles, values in place that worked. Right there, you know, kept everything healthy, kept everything fine. You know, yeah, there were skirmishes, there were wars, people did, but for the most part, at least the environment and everything around there stayed healthy for us to regenerate, be able to rebuild and do these different things. So, like, how do we assume that somehow we can change it and be able to, like, you know, manipulate here and there and fix the little problems? That we can't do that. Those things have been tried for tens of thousands of years, and they got discarded, and then they were in place for tens of thousands of years, and they worked. And so that's the way I see it, is we have to get back to a way of thinking and functioning that adheres to the original principles, obviously, you know. And how do we do that? Obviously, a lot of work. People don't want to do a lot of work, but there's a lot of things actually that I can't speak on right now as far as what needs to be done, because it applies to some of our ceremonies, it applies to some of the spiritual aspects, but at the same time, those things are necessary to think about as well, and they're necessary to be able to regenerate what once existed in our communities.
Yeah, and I think that looking for it is a really difficult question, but sometimes we make it too complicated, and the idea of resistance too complicated as well. And, you know, I know that in New Channel territory, there are folks who talk about the importance of, say, when my son was born 4 years ago, they imagined them graduating by 2020, and they talked about wanting someone like my son to be rooted completely in who we are and how we do things as New Channels people, as a little Chaklisset man. And so that's part of what I feel my responsibility is. And Indian people too, like on the West Coast and in other places who live at home, say in my home in Chaklisset, which is sort of, you have to take a boat and there are no vehicles on the island, etc. They're the ones who will directly feel the effects of any change. They're the ones who get solicited by shale oil and gas and things. They're the ones whose halibut banks still exist way out in the waters and are affected by all of the changes that are going on. So for us, the question of things crumbling and falling apart is not... we just watched a film about those Inuit people, and they were talking about how they're really seeing the change, watching the land change, and even like the sun moving to a different, like watching the earth tilt, I guess they were talking about. Well, that's the same thing I hear from my relatives at home. There's no question. My late grandpa talked about how we're in for another survival. And so he talked about how we know a lot of things, like Anthony's saying, we know some very practical things, and we know some things that are not practical in the sense of, so how do we build this or that? More like on the side of how are we going to be who we are? Like he's saying, how are we going to root our next generations and ourselves while at the same time trying to pull ourselves away from this this really diseased way of living? So it's not for a lot of people, maybe there's still a question as to whether things are falling apart. And what I'm saying is there isn't for a lot of Native people still. And at the same time, we may not feel a lot of support or a lot of, it's a really difficult place, I guess, to imagine. We've been pulled so far away. We've been dangled this carrot in front of us. My friend Fish always says, his nickname's Fishy, always says, they're always dangling a carrot and so, you know, like a reward, a benefit, and then a punishment on the other end. And I think, though, that in Chekla said there is more of a possibility because of it being a much more autonomous place physically. They already are having discussions about how are we going to live without power. My aunt, who's beachkeeper, is how her main concern is how are we going to survive? She's got grandkids. And how are we going to live without money? Like that is there are many women up there in leadership. I mean, it's a small nation, 75 people, but they really are, because the effects of colonization and the destruction of everything, all the pollution and all of the global warming or whatever you call it, it's not all, maybe my relatives don't know all of those terms or words, just like I'm showing I don't really, but they do know what's happening. They do know what's happening to their food. They see the imbalance even with the overabundance of certain things. My relative, Ron Hamilton, had said, you know, he read an article about some scientists wrote about a study on salmon and how there's hardly any salmon. And he said, gee, he could have just come down to see us, because there were two eagles, I guess, in his territory, or an eagle that just was really scraggly and rough and just really sickly looking because he wasn't getting enough in the fall, getting enough sustenance, so he wasn't doing well. And we don't need that a distraction of millions of dollars of research to or whatever, or organizing, urban kind of organizing, to be able to see the common sense of it all, right? And Mike talked about not this like things falling apart on the planet. He didn't talk about an excited or melodramatic. He wasn't trying to be some old Indian, just some Hollywood Indian or something. He is just like, yeah, you know, he lived in a time where when he was a young man, he only needed $200 for ammunition, candles, flour, sugar, maybe sometimes coffee, and that's it. His interaction with non-Native society was maybe once a year. And so going from that rapidly to my age, I'm going to be 40 soon. That's not that long ago. He saw a lot of change, and he wasn't afraid to see that. Yeah, I think this way we're living is not going to last, and we better get ready. That was our family story, is like, well, you know, whatever's going on, we better be prepared for whatever is happening this day. And so that's part of what we're saying. We're not going to say any, you know, that we have any community development plans, that we have an economic alternative, because I think part of what we're saying is that's what we need to get out of. Capitalism isn't something that's still relatively new in the history of our people. It's still a new thing, and we certainly lived a great long number of years without it, and we can continue to do that. So
Yeah, I think that's like just real quick to just add on like what you talked about, like another survival. That's like how our people already have. We have the catastrophes, the things that happen, right? And in a sense, it'll be human. Human has a lot more agency in this one than probably in the past. Maybe not. But we, regardless, we have our peoples. We're survivors of the flood. And, you know, there's a giant flood, and they were told. You know, some people were told, and some people listened, but some people didn't listen, and they got swept away. We can't necessarily be concerned with that. You know, we have a rebuilding in process. We have a process of being able to get ourselves to even be able to hear that voice that tells us to tie our canoes to the top of that rock formation, because it's going to rise, you know, and we have to be able to get, otherwise we don't survive. I can't be concerned necessarily with who else doesn't survive. And I can't necessarily be concerned with helping other people survive or maintain the existence of this world right now, because ultimately the same problem will come right back up again if they don't adhere and they don't follow the principles and values and original teachings in place in these certain areas, you know, because it's just going to be the same problem all over again. Someone else trying to define what is best for that area and completely destroy it. It's going to slow a process, you know, and in some instances, I'm all for speeding a process as long as our people are safe and understanding what's going on and what the necessities are to survive that situation. So,
my daughter's grandfather, she comes from a family on her father's side from Keltsman, from a Housat, where the whole idea of people preparing for what's going to come and folks who also are working towards bringing stuff down, that's not a new idea for New Channel. My daughter comes from family where they were actually prayer warriors, which doesn't mean they were warriors for prayer. They prayed for war, and they were her ancestors' name in English, most loosely translated, is instigator of war. Blood on the Beach is his name. So we had that in our family. Where my family's from, their head chief warrior, and so his song, whatever is happening with the world, I'm ready, like I was saying before. And being ready, I think, is close to what we might call as being angry. It operated in the way we lived as Indian people. So
yeah, and then, I mean, that's the situation too, with being able to prepare to do something like that. Is like, if you understand completely that your people really can't function like in that manner of culturally sound, understanding certain cultural aspects, because whatever the truth or the words, the songs, the prayers, are being muffled by this society and this civilization, then you have to be able to understand that at that point in time, a person who was considered a warrior within the community, their job is to be able to make the environment more capable or more ready for our people to be able to follow those things. So if in the changing situation, it means to be able to bring down a society and a civilization that's stopping our people from being able to function that way, then that's our duty regardless. You know, so at that point, we don't become necessarily just that is our protecting job right there, is to be able to remove all of the artificial world to be able to allow our people to function as they're supposed to be functioning. So that's the job at that point of what people would consider a warrior. Isn't necessarily that point to be like on the defensive. They become on an offensive in a sense. Well, which is is defensive now, right? Because it's a continual, the offensive is still mounting. Every building that's being built, every dam that's being built is an offensive against our people existing as who we are. So we're supposed to be doing that. We're supposed to be removing these artificial muffling structures to be able to allow our people to hear those things again. So I think it's only those two go directly together. Some people might not see that. They might have, but the war has changed, right? You know, that's the reality. So the warrior has to kind of change in certain senses of what they're trying to do too. So I think that's all been part of our culture since day one. It's been forgotten.
Yeah, it's the same concept on the coast. Whenever the nations were to get together and say there was some kind of, now we call it potlatch, but a new shift or a giveaway or a naming or something like that, where there'd be several tribes meeting together and doing business, we say in a modern way, well, they're not doing like economic business, but naming people or bring out songs, you know, that belong to certain people, etc. So there'd be many people gathered in one place, and one of the roles of the Witwalk would be to protect the perimeter of that, to be watching all the time, both how people are ensuring that today that kids aren't running around during certain songs and certain times and certain dances, and watching that parents would watch after their kids. So there's that aspect internally within community, but also you had to be prepared. Like a Witwalk would not be able to eat during a potlatch, which might last actually for a few days, or today sometimes they last from till the next morning, 5-6 o'clock in the morning. You're not allowed to stand, sit. You're always ready, because long time ago, the tribes would be open to attack, and you had to be prepared for. So that involves an assessing of what are the attacks, what are the vulnerabilities, what are the vulnerable points. So part of a Witwalk's role is to understand what are those threats, what are the threats we're facing that day, and assess that and be able to be prepared to push back against, to be on the offensive and the defensive, as Anthony was saying. And so if we look at it, that's one of the things that we need to do today, is understand what are the real threats that are facing our community today. We still need to maintain that role within community as well, in the service of our own people, but also really look carefully and assess and reassess what the threats are, because I find all the things that were involved in, including the BC treaty process, are a large distraction and large waste of resources and spiritual and mental and physical energy.
First off, it's tough to say what would I want to say to the people I want to say things to, but I have little, just based off of, so everyone always says Native people are experiential. They live off of experience. And if I'm going based off of experience, all of these people, even the ones who talk about they're not down for the treaty process, they're not willing to do all these different things, through experience, no one's done anything. So I have little faith in anybody who talks these big games, because I've seen our people continue to get walked over. So that's the reason, like, I focus my energy on the youth, who I believe have a much larger opportunity, a much larger willingness to actually take these steps, even if they might be 13, 15, 17, 19, to actually do the stopping right now. Because for some reason, the further we go along in these politics, whether or not we want to actively be participants in them or accidentally be participants in them, we get more and more corruptive into believing certain things. And this is I wanted to get to this, and this is kind of what I want to say to people, is that when I talked about the war changing, this is why it's different now, like what a warrior is and what a warrior should be, is that we didn't have to deal with the fact, like, so when we say everybody's peoples, right, now it has to be, in a sense, human-centric, like it is to us, because in the past, that's all it was. We never expected other people from different nations to come over and start killing trees. We didn't expect people from different nations to come over and start murdering salmon, having huge fish kills. We didn't envision the fact, because that wasn't happening. But now it's happening. So now we have to utilize the information that we've been given. Maybe it was given to us because of that, because this was eventually to become, at that time, all it was human. It was only human wars. There wasn't our other peoples weren't being murdered, but now they are, because of whatever sickness has been driven here. So the warrior has to change. The warrior has to step in and say, these are our peoples too. Like, we haven't had an experience like that. This is 150 brand new years of this type of thing happening, of our people, our other relatives being murdered like this, like on a mass, on a whole scale rate, you know, that's gigantic and genocidal, ecocidal, whatever you want to call it. But this is what's happening right now. So the warrior has to change. And so I don't envision that these adults that are sitting in different areas, these band councils who say, well, I'm against the treaty process, but at the same time, I want to make money off of building a resort on the side of a mountain too. You know, so I think that contradictions of ideals that exist in our community. So I believe right now that I'm going to work with the youth, because I find no hope in these older heads that have been talking this game for a long time, because their opportunity to stand up and stop has come and gone. And if they don't do nothing right now, then I can't look for them as any kind of example except for a negative example is what not to be. And that's what I would tell the youngsters right now, is that this isn't something you want to be. You don't want to be able to speak a word and not be able to act upon it. That goes with professors as well, who profess about decolonization, who profess about responsibilities over rights, and then don't do a damn thing. That does the same. That's the same thing I'm going to tell these youngsters too, is don't pay attention to these. Start listening to, you know, listen to what's going on in your community and stand up. You know, and so that's the reason I work with youth, because I don't believe any of these people are going to stop anything. They might slow the process. They're only slowing the process for the youth to stand up. They want to be the heroes. They want to put their name on the fact that they helped something. That's cool. Allow that to be. You know what I'm saying? That's why my name is irrelevant in this struggle, because I'm only trying to help my people and it's clan people. You know what I'm saying? And so, you know, anyone else who wants to put their stamp of approval and be known for being the person that helped the process, that's cool. That's all well and good. But I have no trust in these, even in a lot of the elders. You know, our people have taught us to be peace-loving, turn-the-other-cheek type people. And you see what happened, right, is that they cut off the other cheek. You know what I mean? And so that's where I sit right now, is that I'm all about taking action, whatever action is necessary, be it our people used to try and keep our spirit intact. And that means even if we died, we kept our spirit intact. Right now, we're killing our spirit. I'm very concerned about that right now. So if I'm talking to anyone, I'm saving my breath from talking to these older heads, and I'm working with these youngsters because I believe that they have the same ability right now to stand up as anybody else, and probably a more of a willingness to stand up right now. And again, we're talking about kids who used to be warriors when they were 13, 12 years old. We don't see it like that now because we're in a foreign political system where you got to reach 18 or you got to reach a certain age to be able to buy cigarettes, drink, or vote, or whatever it is. But our people used to be able to see the ability in all of our youngsters. The youngsters were addressed in any kind of significant problem where I come from. They were addressed in their big house. They were addressed to be able to see what their idea of what needs to happen. And so that's really it. You know, I see the rest of these cats as being weak. Anyone who even holds a discussion on a treaty, be it good or bad, they're punks, because they shouldn't even be having that conversation. They should be out there on the front lines, you know, because we need people on the front lines right now everywhere. Everywhere needs a front line warrior, you know what I mean? But that's the way I see it, though. You know, I could be wrong, but that's the way I'm going to stand.
And I would probably say to young people too, like the same kind of thing. Well, young people, old people, but I guess the potential for young people is the same for me, that they're stronger and that, you know, and encourage rebelliousness against your parents, against people, because that's your job. You have that energy. But that too, in the same way, and I just might say it differently, is that, you know, as a new child person, as far as I understand it, I may have been, especially growing up in this culture, inspired by particular individuals in my life and how they stood for things, for our people and for the land. And I'll always appreciate that. But I always understood that it was my job to inspire myself. And I think young people need to hear that too, that it's your responsibility as young Native people to look to yourselves for that and to know that this is your world. And this is what was told to me. This is your hahosli. And it's not your hahosli metaphorically. It is yours literally. And it is a great and ominous responsibility. And you need to take that up. It's your world, and you need to decide how you're going to be in this world. And I also want to say from my own experience that it's much more difficult to walk around with the weight of living this way than it is to put one foot in front of you and step outside of the box. You know, everyone likes to talk about living or thinking outside of the box. Even business people talk about thinking outside of the box. Well, literally, for our people, to put it in that context to young people, you know, well, maybe not so much young people, but people that are older and say, oh, I can't do this, I can't stand up for that because of my predicament, I have a family, all of that. So is that it doesn't, it's harder to live like that than it is to take the weight off your shoulder and put one foot out. So I guess that's all I have to say.
The pledge to resist. We believe that as a people living in the United States, it is our responsibility to resist the injustices done by our government in our name.
That was Pledge to Resist by DJ Spooky and Saul Williams. In Derek Jensen's latest Orion article, he says, quote, "One of the many ways this culture is killing the planet is through a lack of imagination." So what should we imagine? Imagine what it would look like if we fulfilled our contracts or relationship with the rest of the living world. Imagine what it would look like if we believed that they, the moose, buffalo, salmon, and berries, took care of us. That wolves, bears, and prairie chickens were peoples wiser than humans. Imagine that the earth is a living being. Imagine that she is our mother. As one elder always says, the earth is our mother because she gives us everything that we need to survive. We have never needed electricity to survive. We have never needed computers or the combustion engine to survive. We have always needed earth. And without a relationship with her, those who take care of us, those who are wiser, the culture has gone insane. Imagine a resistance that believes in this relationship with all living beings. Imagine a resistance that loves the earth. Imagine a resistance that renews and fulfills their know our obligations to those peoples that take care of us. Imagine they believed this to the core of their being. Imagine what they could do. Taking us out is Resident Antihero with Don't Let Them In. Remember, folks, the resistance needs you.
We are standing before the forces of power. We're on the move now.
Graves that we